Today is November 21st. We are recording the beginning of the text of Megillat Rut. Vayibi mei shvota shoftim vayira av ba'aretz. Vayelach ish bibeit lechem Yehuda lagur b'shtei Moab hu b'ishto shnei manav. As I told you before, the narrative style of Rut, to begin every pasuk with the letter Vav, implies a continuum. Because of shvota shoftim, this is how Medrash Rabbah understood it, therefore vayira av ba'aretz. Therefore, how do we understand Shvot HaShoftim? Things were so bad that the judges had to be judged. The judges were corrupt. It's a man of Chazal. When judgment, justice is corrupt, famine comes to the world. God will not allow His Shefa, His blessing of abundance, to affect the land when the people don't deserve it. Right. But the pshat, of course, is "Vayibi mei shvot haShoftim" means in the time of Sefer Shoftim, when the judges ruled, right? When the rulers were called Shoftim, not Malachim. That's pretty clear. This story is taking place 2-3 generations before David. That would put it right smack in the middle of Shoftim. The question is, which is Boaz one of the Shoftim? Which time are they living? So we can't tell how long Oved or Yishai or these people lived. Apparently, Oved lived quite a long time, if Chazal are correct when they say that she was related to Eglon Melech Moab. Maybe she was the granddaughter, possibly even the daughter. But I told you last time, those midrashim may not be meant to be taken literally. Maybe meant that she was from royalty. She was the great-great-great-granddaughter of Eglon. The point being that, like the genre of saying that Hogar was the daughter of Parah. What do the two have in common? That even royalty would prefer to mingle with the Jews. They're so much higher in morality, and we enjoy what they do. We see their way of life is preferable to what we have here. That their heightened morality would make Hagar leave the palace to live with Avraham. There it's even more pronounced. Explain why. There she preferred to become a shivcha than to live in the palace. Rus, all right, she met a nice Jewish guy. The Jewish guys have a reputation that they're good husbands. They come home at night. They don't beat their wives. They bring them with them. They give gifts. They have dinner with the kids. You know, they have good reputations, unlike the Moabite men, right? The Egyptian men. So the Medrash creates this genre of nevach that has always been true. Wherever the Jewish men went, they quickly saw as a sign of making it in this new country that they could marry a Babylonian woman. And this got the likes of Malachi and Ezra to complain to them. Look what you're doing. The Mizbeach is crying for the Jewish women who don't have men to marry. Right. Okay. So this is what caused the Ra'av, and as a result of the Ra'av, a man from Beis Lechem Yehuda went Labur Bistei Moav. Now, the description of the man without saying his name, Chazal tell us is a sign of his chashivus. He's an important man. Where do you see that? Why would you say that this is an important man? So, you ever b'makom she'ein ish hishtadel liyod? Actually, the true manner is b'makom she'ein anoshim hishtadel liyod ish. When you see no man, become a man. Huh? What does that mean? When you're living in a place with only women? What does it mean when you see no man? What is it? Well, obviously, what is that talking about?
Nobody's stepping up and like.
Right. Use a good Yiddish word, a mensch. No one's stepping up. When Moshe looked this way and that way, and it says Vayarki ein ish, don't you see the homily oozing out of those words? I would say Vayarki ein roeh. No one was looking. Why does it say Vayarki ein ish? He saw no man.
No one's police officer.
No one. Right, so the Tziv says he saw no Egyptian acting like a mensch, saying, should we be doing this to these poor people? And the Ksava Kabbalah says, no, who cares? It's talking about the Jews. How are you going on with your work watching this guy do this? You're the 10 of you, there's only one of him. He said, yeah, but if we kill him, they'll kill 100 of us. What are we supposed to do? Rebel, revolt, you have to have some dignity. You know, it's beautiful, there's a pasuk like this in Yeshayahu. When Yeshayahu in Perek Nun Tes says God comes down to the world and he's looking at what man has accomplished. And he sees that widows are suffering. The orphans have no one to tend to them. And he says, Vayar ki ein ish. There you go. Lots of men in the world. Explain. Where does it say the word ish? Ish l'reihu, you mean? I'm not sure that the word... the word ish appears in that story, but I don't know, can you darshan it? The word ish has to appear in a place where the text is begging for something more than just a man. For instance, when David saw Shaul across a ravine and he managed to get his coat and cut off a piece, or another time he managed to get his canteen and his spear, he looks at Avner and he says, Avner, isn't your job to guard your king? He says, Halo ish atah. Get it? Halo ish, what do you mean? What does that mean? I'm a man? All my men are men. Right? Halo ish atah means you're the man. You hear it? Okay, so it doesn't mean every time the word ish appears that it's going to be that way. But when it does, we can feel it, and this pasuk is one of those. Okay? Okay. Right, it's Beis Lechem Yehuda to differentiate it from Beis Lechem Binyamin, which we don't have time now to discuss it fully, is likely the true burial place of Rachel, based on the evidence of Yirmiyahu Lamed Aleph, that they marched north to Bavel through Beis Lechem, and that a better evidence, besides what appears to be in Parshas Vayishlach, better evidence from a story in Shmuel Aleph, where Shaul is told to go to Kever Rachel in Eretz Binyamin. There is a city called Tzeltzach, which is not anywhere near Beis Lechem Yehuda.
But aren't you able to go to Kibra Rachel, if not the right Kibra?
So, what can I say? Okay, she's buried there because we say she's buried there.
And the Beis Lechem that's the birthplace of supposedly Jesus is where?
That's Beis Lechem Yehuda, where this story takes place, and where David was born. Of course, he was born because that's his family. They didn't move somewhere to a different place. This is great grandparents. Okay. Notice the verb used for what they're doing to Moab. They're going lagur. What does that imply? What? Not so much. Lagur means to visit. It's just for a short stay. The same lashon that's used for when they went to Egypt.
But
of course, we tend to.
When he originally buried her, they weren't on the way to Mitzrayim.
When, I'm sorry?
When Rachel was buried, they weren't marching to Bava. The Jews were marching to Bava and they cried.
When they went to, right? No, they were just crossing back into Israel after Yaakov had been with Laban, was it?
From Mitzrayim? Where
from Aram.
That would also indicate the north.
There's no sure evidence there. Right, but
makes more sense than to base it on a. You're basing it on that says.
The two cities called Beit Lechem. Shmuel Aleph, Shmuel tells Shaul, go to where Rachel is buried. I know why, because Rachel is his ancestor. He's from Shevet Binyamin. Go to where Kever Rachel is buried. These things will happen to you. It's near a city called Tzeltzach, which is all in Binyamin. But then I'm just telling you, why does it say Beit Lechem Yehuda here? Because there's another Beis Lechem called Beis Lechem Binyamin. This is a much more popular Beis Lechem. This is one that's close to Yerushalayim, south of Yerushalayim. Okay,
what's the evidence besides Shmuel?
I think the evidence of if you want to say that the Chazal say that Rachel...
When they were on their way to God.
Yeah, but why would Babylonia march them south so that they could say goodbye to Mama Rachel on their way north?
So which one are you taking proof from? Shmuel or
They're both pointing in the same direction. Okay, anyway. All right, so they just went for a short stay. Now, Chazal say that they're held responsible for this. But the Gemara Baba Basra says you're allowed to leave Israel in a time of famine. I'm not saying that they knew that this Gemara, but I'm asking this. If Chazal say that in a time of famine, one is justified in leaving, you don't have to stick around for the famine. So why are they so harsh with him? Right? I think we discussed that last time. The same reason that the Ramban is harsh with Avraham for leaving in a time of famine. You know what I'm saying? Because you're the captain. You don't leave so quickly. To Ramban, what's a failure of the test, right, is to Rashi a passing of the test. Because did Avram pass that test? Talk to me. When the famine came?
By leaving.
No, that's the Ramban, how he failed the test. How does he pass it according to Rashi?
By not complaining.
By not complaining, of course. Right? He said, I'm going to deal with whatever I have to take life as it comes. Ramban says, if Avram had said, I'm not leaving this place, God told me to come here, I'm not leaving. He's testing me. If Avram had said that, Yaakov probably would have said it too. When he learned that Yosef was alive. So I'm not leaving this place. At that point, Hashem told him to leave, as the Ramban explains amazingly, using his famous dictum, Masel Busim Labanim. That's why God told him, because your grandfather left. This is now a kapora for that. Amazing. Seems to be like Gemara Nedarim that says something similar about the way Avram talked to Hashem in a different story, but I ain't shown the Flamed Dalet, if you have time. Okay, so Shem Ha'ish Elimelech, Shem Ishto Naomi, Shem Shnei Banav, Machle Mechilion, Efratimi Beit Lechem Yehuda, Ve'evo, Stei Moab, Ve'yusha. Look at all the vows in this one pasuk. It just shows what I told you about. Another book would just say Shem Ha'ish. Well, this is Ve've've'. So we discussed all that already. Now remember what I told you about Dorei Shemos, remember? Why all these? Because these names just beg to be darshaned. Who would name a child with Machlon and Chilion? Right? So here it's a vow, Stei Moav, and even though it said Lagursham in the beginning, Vayiyusham implies a more permanent stay. Chazal darshan a lot, Behayu Hadrimoy, that has to be just like this, it's permanent. Right? The Yosef Hayom in Mitzrayim, Yosef remained as he always was. There's some lumpness in there. Just said Yosef in Mitzrayim. Yosef Hayoi means he remained as he always was. Otherwise, what do you see in those three psukim that Yosef remained in Tzadik while he was in Egypt? Right? So it says Vayihu Sham. They remained there. They took on a permanence, as often happens. Therefore, Vayomas Elimelech Ishna Ami Batisha'er Hiyu Shnei Voneha. Right? You shirked your responsibility. Remember we made the chart last class. The people who do Chesed, the people who do negative Chesed, the people who are Beinonim. So in a book that's dedicated to Chesed, Amar Bizera, Ein B'Sefer Zulu, Tuma B'Tara, Lo Yisur B'Heter, Elo L'Hagim Lanu Koach Shel Chesed, that the Chesed would take a woman from a despised nation whose father subjugated us, who about whom the Torah says Lo Yavo B'Kal Hashem, and it made her the Imo Shel Malchus, a book that's dedicated to the turn of Chesed, right? So if you are just normal, you're going to be forgotten. Orpah, Ploni, Almoni, and the Nahar. But if you are negative chesed, you die. You die. That's about what happens to Onan in Bereishis Perek Lamed Ches, right? For the first time, someone's trying to teach his brothers how to be a brother, right? Do this to your brother. Brothers don't get along in Sefer Bereishis. Finally, Yehuda's getting it, right? When he said, save Yosef, he said, how can we do this to him? He's our brother. Twice he says, don't do this to our brother. He didn't love him, but he said, don't do this to our brother. Let's sell him. Let's get something out of it. See, Yehuda's smart. He knew how to save his life. He knew that just saying, let's bring him home to father, might not carry the day. Although, Chazal say that it would have carried the day. Huh? How do they know that? Right after Yosef is sold, Yehuda leaves the family. The story we're talking about here right now, right? He leaves the family. Petra says, why? Why did Yehuda leave the family? Because every brother blamed Yaakov's melancholy on Yehuda. Why is it my fault? I saved his life. Explain to me. Why'd they blame it on him? Why am I saying it now at this point?
He's the Ish.
You would have listened to if you said, I'm taking them home. Reuven didn't feel he could do that. He's Pachas Kamayim. He's not very convincing, Yehuda, to Reuven. Yehuda is always going to be more convincing. Right? Reuven always has good intentions, but he never comes through altogether. So Yehuda, they said, if you had grabbed him by the hand and say, we're taking him home, we wouldn't have objected. So you're the one we blame now. Got it? So he couldn't take it anymore and he had to leave. Okay, so he's finally getting it. He says, oh, look what we made, look what we did. Enough. But they took an oath, a blood oath, not to tell Yaakov what happened. That's why all those years, no one opened the mouth. You'd think that one of the sons would open his mouth and say, Tati, stop suffering. He He's probably someplace. He's not dead.
But so where's the problem?
What?
Where do we learn that from?
Learn what?
The oath.
Oh, I mean, it's a tanchum at the end of the Chukosai, and it's all over Chazal that the brothers took this oath. Otherwise, the Chazal couldn't picture how the brothers didn't break down and one of them said something. Because at that time, they hated him very much. Right? So they said, take an oath right now, we're never going to reveal what happened here this day. No, he wasn't alive. Never knew. See, Esav, in this week's parsha, he says, Yakum Evel Yitzchak Abiva, Agos Yaakov Achi. I'll wait till my father's dead, because as much as I hate my brother and like to kill him, I acknowledge that his death would cause my father grief. The brothers did not share this sentiment. Right? Okay. So here, Yehuda finally tries to teach a brother, do something. Your brother died. No one to remember him. Take his wife and give him some remembrance. Right? The mitzvah of Yibam, we all know it, right? So, if a man refuses to do that, that's called chalitza, yeah? I mean, the Mishnah in Bechoros that we just learned a few days ago in the Daf Yomi says, no, a few days from now, it's at the end of the first parak, says mitzvah chalitza kodemis, because we're afraid that he's not going to do the yibam with the right frame of mind. Okay, fine, you don't do yibam anymore for a long time. But if a man refuses to, chalitza, all right, you spit in his face, you call him a bad name, but he's not going to die for that. He wanted the woman, but he didn't want the name. So what he does afterwards gets him killed. Right? So it's one and the same of these three men dying. Because finally someone's trying to teach chesed and say be gracious amongst brothers, and you don't listen, that's going to be more egregious. I mean, Cain kills the brother and doesn't get killed for it. Right? He just refuses to give his brother remembrance and he gets his God kills him for it, right? You see, you understand it now? Same reason why these three people are dying. Right? Continuing. Vaisula have no shimo aviyot, shema achas orpa v'shema shenis rus, v'eshu sham kesev sham. Right? And their children, they're living there for 10 years, two Jewish boys with their mother, and two Moabite women. Found Moabite women. Are these sisters? Are they? It doesn't really matter for sure. Vayamusu gam shnehem machon v'chelyon. They also died. Okay. Who's married to whom, by the way? It's not quite clear. Who are the two women that get married? One is called Orpa, one is called Rus. Who are they married to? Machlon and Chelyon. Machlon is always mentioned first. So who's husband? Does it matter too much? We find out at the end of the story that Machlon was married to Rus. One might not have drawn that conclusion here in these psukim. But at the end of the story, when Boaz says, will you take the name of Machlon? Right, Machlon was mentioned at the end of the story. You take the place of Machlon.
So why would it say Machlon Chilion or Peru?
Mar and Brachas, you know, the Mishnah and Brachas starts off with Mar and Chakras, and it goes on Chakras and then Mar, you know, it switches. We're just talking about this one, so let's stick on this one for the time being. But Yemusagam Shnehem, they also die. But Machon Bechel, the Tishera Isha Mishneh Ladeo Meisha. She was bereft. This implies that she is not consoled by the fact that she has two daughters in law. What am I going to do with them? Right? But Tokam Hibachal Osem, a Toshav Miste Moav, Kishamo Miste Moav. She got up with her two daughters-in-law to return from Moab. Now, even though only one of them is returning, those two girls aren't returning, right? Adrab, just as Batoshav in singular, right? Remember I told you about the Hashgacha practice that pervades this entire story? Tune in, right? This is our first clear example of this. Right? The Pasuk could just as well have said she heard that there was food again in Israel. The famine was over.
Okay.
Instead, it's Kipakad Hashem. This book is filled with those kind of references. It's a very from book. Everyone sees whatever happens as an act of God. Okay? That's a good thing to say. It's good to get used to saying. I mean, sometimes you hear Bali Tshuva getting into things right away, so they like to say Hebrew words, right? And they mix it up. You know, they don't know what they're saying. So they say, my father's influence has been trying to say. So it's I'm not saying it's false from Kai, but it, you know, like I call my daughter every day in Israel. She's in Mechala. So I hear she's saying, oh, Baruch Hashem, I had such a good day today. You know, it's wonderful. You know, it's a good thing to do. I'll take a view. When Yosef sent back word to his parents that he's alive, he said, Samani Elokim La'adon, I'll call Eretz Mitzrayim. Do you see a homily dripping out of those words? What does it mean? Samani Elokim La'adon. The pshat is, God made me master over Egypt. What word do you, what else might you hear from these words? Samani Elokim La'adon, I'll call Eretz Mitzrayim. When Yosef tells Paro what to do about collecting food, remember what Paro said? He didn't say your God. He says, now that God has revealed this information to you.
Somebody else, I've placed God over.
Right. I have placed God as king over Egypt. Do you see it?
That's Paro?
That's Yosef talking, but it's Yosef is saying, because when Paro appointed me to be the head of Egypt, he said, now that God has revealed this information to you, who would be better than you to arrange for all the food in my country? Remember? Right? So he doesn't say now that you know, wow, your God must have some insider information here. Let's let me look into him. He says, now that God, you know, there's sort of a generic God, if you will. He doesn't say you give up, he says Elohim, but still. You know, that's good enough. So too with this book, God is really, he's all over the place. All right, you'll see it cropping up all the time. Next, vateitze min hamakom asher ha'isa shama u'shtei chalitza ima vateilachna baderech l'shuv el eretz Yehuda. Okay, so the word toshav, about returning, is really is applies to her. Right? And they left the place where they were in order to return. Now, the journey to Beis Lechem Yehuda, where she started, from Moab, as you know from the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, Moab is very, very close to Israel. That's why the language is so close to Israel, as I told you last class, right? It's Mamish, the cousin languages. Moabite is the closest language to Hebrew than any other language. Much closer than Arabic and Aramaic. Right? A full understanding of Hebrew makes you not fluent, but certainly able to listen and understand Moabite.
Where do Moabite?
Well, the famous Meshes stone. We don't have a whole lot, but what we have is one of the most significant finds in all biblical archaeological history. A huge stone that describes events of the beginning of Melech Beis between Moabites and the Northern Kingdom.
Is it exactly the same as it's listed in Malachim Beis?
Well, it describes a battle, and in the Meshes stone they win, and in Tanakh we win. But that's okay. We can explain that. I don't just mean that it's totally subjective history. It just means that different stages of the battle. You know, of course, we win because we're here still reading the Malachim Beis. No one's reading the Meshes stone anymore.
Where is the stone today?
It's now. It's the original is housed in the Louvre in Paris. There are copies all over the place. In my intro to the Bible class, I have a picture of it. The Hebrew inscriptions. Didn't we mention the fact that the Torah Tzmima in this parish, it's called Tosefes Bracha, he writes that we're about to read of all the masculine pronouns that appear. That it's because in Moabite, they don't differentiate between masculine and feminine, so they got used to saying things like that end with a mem for women. You follow me? Mem is for men, like imochem, asher asisem. And for a woman, you would have to use a nun, imochem, asher asisem. So you'll notice as we read the text that there's a lot of male pronouns going on. Medrash Rabbah, which can resort to drash, says that they dressed up as men because of this dangerous journey through what's called the Ona Yarden. Women who travel from Moab to Beis Lechem are it's not a question of the odds. You will be killed or violated. Right? There are marauders just waiting for you. But if you have if you dress up in, dress up as men and you look scary, then you have a chance. Right? So that's the Medrash saying they dressed up as men. And look, they're, remember, did we talk about Rechav and Bana who made their way into the palace? They got in dressed up as wheat sellers. The people delivering wheat, they killed them, took their clothes and their wheat delivery and more important, the bill. And they said, "We're not in the palace." They said, "Here we have your wheat." It was okay. Show me the bill. Okay, you're compliant. So once they got in, they killed the guys at the door, and they ran towards the king who was sleeping at the time, right? And then when they leave, the Tanakh calls them feminine. Hey, no. But with a nun, not with a man.
Where is this?
Shmuel Beis Perek Dal. So when they leave, they're given a feminine pronoun. Why are you doing this? So pashtus, there's no shot for such a thing. It's an inconsistency, and that's the first order of drash, is to explain inconsistency. Right? Now, when inconsistency happens a lot, so you can say, okay, sometimes the word for first can be written echod and not rishon. Okay, you can do that. Sephardic commentaries like Ibn Ezra, Chiyuj, Janah did that a lot. But Rashi tended to like a word to mean its more common thing. So when another word is used, it'll darshan. Right? So when it calls them women, how did they get out of the palace? With the king's head? They had a bowling bag? How did they get the king's head out of the palace? Remember what they say? If it calls them women, they have disguises with them. How do you get out of the palace with the king's head? They dressed as pregnant women. Or at least one of them did. So they didn't check that. They said, okay, go ahead, let's game. I'm saying?
What about the other guy?
I'm with her. You know, they were together. They were two women. They dressed up as women. Hang on. It says in plural as women. So I don't mind darshaning on that. If it fits and it works, okay. So in our section here, so the Torah Tzmima says that because in Moabite they don't differentiate between masculine and feminine. Okay, the Torah Tzmima should have known better. He lived into the 30s. He was here in America for a little while. The Mesha Stone was found in the 19th century. Should have called up some kind of scholar and asked, do we know any Moabite around here? Because it's pretty much the only thing that we have in Moabite, but it's very significant. And in that stone, there is a differentiation between masculine and feminine. Like in Hebrew, because it's so close to Hebrew. So it's not really, it's a nice shot, but it's not a good terrace. You hear? So we have to go back to saying, maybe they just dressed up as, or it's possible that they did the work of men. Thank you for burying the dead. Usually a man is burying the dead, so women, did the whole work themselves. I've done many, many funerals. And while it's true that sometimes, that there are different chevra kadishas that allow women, some don't even allow women into the cemetery at all.
Really?
Right? Yeah, not even the daughter. Some will allow them to stand on the road, some will allow them to be in, and actually did. One thing I've never seen in any cemetery is female grave diggers that are working in the cemetery. Never seen it. I'm in the cemetery every 2-3 weeks. Right? One time I did a funeral all by myself. Mamish, myself.
Huh?
I was no one there, no one from the family.
Sure.
Yeah, it was mom. It wasn't an indigent. It wasn't an indigent. It was just someone whose family did no one show up. Never married, don't have kids, and no one showed up.
Friends?
85 years old. No, I mean, no one was there. One time I saw someone, the grave diggers, not even the rabbi doing it. So I walked over and I said, after finishing one film, I went over and said, can I say a prayer? Can I say, maybe the office they knew a name, but I just said, all right, Rebbe Shlomo, grant perfect repose unto the neshama that's being buried here. And after I said my whole prayer in Hebrew, so the guys were like chuckling a little bit. So I say, what's going on? What's happening? He goes, I never saw a rabbi give such a beautiful prayer for burying a septic tank.
They were.
It wasn't a person. It was. So. I see them flattening the ground there, and I said, let me say a prayer. What do you mean? It's such a sad thing. Not even one person scientists to bury the guy.
It's actually a good voice.
So, anyway.
Okay, there's a nice little joke for you. We're getting back to Torah now.
So, the point is that women, when women are burying, don't be surprised that the Torah is going to call them men. Right? We have different families we'll put in one shovel, but now when you see them, you go to the next funeral you're at, you see everyone's doing the real work, or the men, no? Women don't want to do it. So when in our parsha, when it talks about the women burying the dead, look at Pasuk Ches. Right? V'tomen nami l'shtei kalosei, lech noshov na yisho veis levei sima. Yas Hashem imochem chesed kasher asisem imameisim v'imadi. There you go. Why is it saying twice in the Pasuk using a male pronoun? Because that is that a better pshat than that they were dressed up as men? I think so.
Technically, should we be burying the blood also? Person.
What are you getting at? Yes? What's your point?
Today, when, let's say, when her husband, in Israel, do they collect blood?
Okay, okay. If the person dies and is attached to tubes, they take everything. They don't even do a tower. They just take everything and wrap it around him and they do as much as they can. But yes, they do.
But in America, they don't.
They don't.
They take the tubes out.
They do. Anything that's attached to them, any blood that drips out, they bury the sheep, they take it.
So, we're around doing surgery. If someone...
Why are you asking this? Just ask after class. Okay, so here they say, go back. Ishav leves ima. You see, ima? Why does it say ishav leves ima? Go back to your mother's house. So, there's so many drushes of Chazal. It's Gemara Yevamos that says that, you know, they didn't know who their father was. I didn't know who their father is. Maybe, right? You know, Shir Rabba just goes so far out to show how chaste the women, the Jewish women, were in Egypt. Because even though they were married to slaves, a slave tends to be very, very promiscuous. The master wants him to be promiscuous. I'll give you 10 women, just do whatever you want. At the end of a hard day in the field, this is all you have to look forward to in all of life. And they grow to like that, right? But in contradistinction to this kind of thing, plus they want them to have more babies, more slave babies. In contradistinction to this, we say that we were able to, every Jew leaving Egypt was able to point to their father, except one, that guy at the end of Parshas Amor who cursed because he was shoved out of line because he couldn't tell who his father was. That's the whole point. That's the only guy. That's why they tell the story. You know what I'm talking about, right? The guy from Dan, his father was an Egyptian, right? He had a psak halacha. He didn't like the psak, so he cursed. You know what I'm talking about? No, at the end of Parshas Amor. So the Makalka. Gadiv. So the as opposed to the Egyptians didn't know who their father was. How do we know that? Because when it says not a single house had anyone that wasn't dead in the 10th plague. Cain buys a shemin shamnes. Right? So Rashi says, how do you know? Maybe there could be a house. If the father is not a bechor, the mother is not, and the first child is a girl. So how do you know? Maybe they, so in the middle of the 10th plague, this guy's fourth child dies. He goes, wait a second, I thought Moshe said only the firstborn had died. He goes, this is not my firstborn. Oh, well, it's your neighbor's firstborn. All right, anyway, the point of this measure is to show that while the slaves were being chased, their masters were being unjust and promiscuous, right? So that's why it says Yishol Leves Ima. That's a fancy drash. I think it's here. It's good. Can you think of a simple pshat? Go, my daughters-in-law. Go, Orpah and Rus. Go back to you, each one to your mother. What's the pshat? Why didn't she go to your parents?
They'll be able to take care of
them. I mean, later on, when Boaz is in bed with her, and he says, hey, this is even better than your first chesed. I heard how you left. I'm not sure this was in bed. It's earlier when they were in the field. I heard how you left your father's house to come be with your mother-in-law. What a schus. What a balas chesed you are. So that sort of precludes this drash here. He says father. Right? So especially if she's the king's daughter, he's just trying to say more praise for what you did. Here it's just a simple thing. What is my only doing here? Come on, talk to me. Simple pshat. Give me the contrast. Why do you want to go to you with your mother-in-law? You should go to your mother. Who on earth, on God's green earth, likes their mother-in-law more than their mother? You should see what Chazal say about mother-in-law. One shavuos after, you know, I give shirim all two shavuos. I mean, how many shirim can you give? I once gave a shirim on mother-in-law in Jewish literature. It's fascinating what you find there. I want to say for the record, I know my mother-in-law 32 years. I have never had one coarse word with my mother-in-law in 32 years. Never. So I'm just saying that for the record. I don't know if she's going to listen to it one day, but now that we're home, I'm going to shut the tape for a minute. No, I'm saying that is it a necessity? See, there's some of the things that appear in Chazal about the mother-in-law. It's amazing. And especially when we have such a beautiful paradigm of mother-in-law in Tanakh. Anyway, the Parsha Peshad is, why do you want to go with your mother-in-law? Go with your mother. Right? What is this Yas? You see the Kriyuksiv there? Right? The Gemara in the Darim on Daf Lamed Zayin says that Kriyuksiv is Halacha Mosh Misina. There's something to be derived from both sides. Ravanel and Radak said that Kriyuksiv, if you recall maybe from intro, Radak in his Akdamah to Nevi'im Rishonim and in his places in his parish, says that a Kriyuksiv means that Ezra wasn't sure which word belongs, which one doesn't. So he wrote them both. One in the margin and one to be ready. That's pretty. That's different than the Gemara. Right? What's the difference between the two words, though? And I think this is instructive about the way you should go around giving blessings. Right? I just can't understand when you give someone some money and they say, you're going to have all the brachas and shefa and bracha. How do you know? Don't say I'm going to have bracha and shefa. Say I should have bracha and shefa. Are you a navi? I love when people at funeral chapels. I'm talking about funerals. They go. They run around with their stalker boxes. Stalker tatzil mimoves. Stalker tatzil mimoves. This is not the place to say that. The hospital is where you should say that. The guy's dead already. So I love all these people collecting stalker that give you nevuos. Don't give me nevuos. Right? I don't want a nevua. I would like a bracha. That would be nice. So Yas Yaaseh Hashem Imachem Chesed means God will do Chesed to you because of what you did. Yas Hashem Imachem Chesed means God ought to, should. We're allowed to say what we feel God ought to do. You shouldn't have the chutzpah to say what God should do. I have a sense that all benevolent God ought to do benevolent things. The problem is that my limited understanding might not interpret it. These things properly, and I still, you know, Hashem wants us to be engaged. There's no question about it. We don't need to just accept everything and say, "Well, if God did it, it must be good." We say bracha for good news and a different bracha for bad news. But don't go around saying what God will do. That's not the. That's the message from this Kriyuksiv, right? Okay. Pasuk Tes, Yitena Hashem lachem umetzem menucha isha beis isha. As a result, it means may God give you. Start a bracha with the word may. Don't go around saying what you know God is going to do. Okay. I mean, once when I was recently introducing a program that serves food to poor, very, very poor people in Israel, and it was at the parsha of Amalek. So I said, it seems that Hashem's worst punishment in the Torah is reserved for the nation that attacked the weak and the infirm in the back of the lines. They went to the weakest ones. So if God's worst enemy, so to say, in the Tanakh, is the ones who attack the weakest, surely it must be that God's best friend are the ones who protect the weakest. Now, am I sure what God's agenda is? I can just read what's written in the Torah. Right? But we have to be very careful how we go around predicting what we think God. I don't mind saying what we expect God to do. Right? I expect the best, but I prepare for the worst. it's written in the Torah. I know what's God's agenda at every in any given day. What's part of the big plan, right? May God give you umitzena menucha isha beis isha, each woman to find her husband. Batishak lahem batisena kolana batifkena. May you all find that shidduch, right? Do you know what the word shidduch? What language is shidduch? It sounds Yiddish, right? Shadchan. It's not Yiddish. It's Aramaic. Shidduch, shin dalet chof, is the Aramaic translation of the Hebrew word sheket. Vatishkot ha'aretz is ushidochis ara. It's menucha. A shidduch gives you menuchas ha'nefesh. You are unsettled until you find that.
Only has one of the same letters. How do you get
sheket, shidduch? I mean, chof and dalet are it's interesting because they're adbashes. Kuf is the Atbash of Dalet, and Tes is the Atbash of Chav.
So the what?
They're inverse in the Hebrew alphabet. But that's not. So what?
So how are you deriving one?
How does Ish Gavra in Aramaic? I don't know. It's a different language. It's a question. Alright, so they're all crying. But Tomano Loki, Tochno Shud Lamech. No. We would like to return with you. Even though we're not returning, but we return with you. You're returning, we'd like to go with you. That means that it's amazing. That's just amazing. I know, we know about Bruce, but Orpah's agreeing at this point also. Why would they choose to go with Naomi and not go back home with their familiar? It's possible that they are rejected at home for marrying Jewish men. But we're going to go back now. Who's going to accept us back home? Nah, my parents reject us. I'm not interested. We'd like to come with you. Vatomer, Naomi, show them the side. Lo matilach, Naomi. How would they bond in b'mayav yudachem on Hashem? What's the implication of this? Go back home, my daughters. Because I'll say that they were 40 at this time. I don't know. But however old you think they're married. Married 10 years without children. Go back, my daughters. Are you going to wait for me to have another baby? This is, by the way, a serious breach of halacha, what she's saying. But this shouldn't be judged by halachic sugya and beseches yavamos. What is the implication of what she's saying? You must go back home because I'm too old to have another son for you to marry. What's the implication of such a thing?
Even if there's no son at the time.
Okay, that's the implication that it's against the halacha. Parsha of Yibam starts Ki Yishuachim Yachdov, right? And it's a very famous case where you can't do Yibam if the brothers were not alive at the same time. Otherwise, you always have to worry. Maybe the mother will have a child later in life. Should wait to remarry. Right? You know what I'm saying? If there are no more brothers, she can marry without Chalitza. No one to give her Chalitza.
The brothers should be alive when they get married or when she dies.
At the time the brother died, he had to have at least been alive for one day with his brother. Okay, this could be a tragedy today if you have a 20-year-old man who gets married, right? And he has five sisters, and he has a 2-year-old brother. That is not so outrageous. And he gets married, and then he dies. That woman can't get married until that 2-year-old is old enough to be a bar mitzvah and give her chalitza. So be very careful. A woman has to be very careful marrying in such a situation.
There's no one now.
Because chalitza can't be given by before bar mitzvah.
That's still today.
The chalitza is given to the yibam, is not.
Right. That also applies today.
Such a situation, if it would be, or there's something else that can be done, based on the Tshuva Saramah, that says that if I die without a child, this marriage is not halachic. If I die without a child, the Ramah is a Tshuva like this. It could probably solve our good problems, but the Ramah is a Tshuva about a man who was very sick, didn't expect to live too long, but his fiance wanted very much to marry him. And he said, but what if I die without the child? You'd be in trouble because my only brother is a shlub and a despicable person who will not give you a chalitza unless you give him $1 million. So they went to the Rambam with the teretz, and he said, so when you give her the ring under the chuppah, say, haret mekudesh es tabazu almanas, that you and I have a child. If you do not have a child, and I die before you have a child, this ring is worthless.
But if you do have a child, then that still applies to today. Has that ever happened to him?
I never heard of a case like this. But if a woman is married, you say the woman might have married an 18-year-old guy with a 20-year-old guy with a 2-year-old brother, but he had a child right away. What's the question? He didn't die right away.
But he said if he had a child and then passes away, what happens?
There's nothing
happens. Like
before the child's born, like she's pregnant, but it's not born. There's no
animal. She wouldn't be able, assuming she gives birth to a child, even for 1 hour.
Because I might say we don't say, by
Kriya Mekadesh,
we don't say this, so...
No, of course not. Retroactively. Yeah, so if somebody, if you want to stop a good to say, we can say, I'm not saying anything. I'm going to ask that if a Beis Din says, I should give you a get, and I refuse for 2 months, this is worthless. Solve every case of Migun.
Why don't we do
it? It's true, it's a Rambam. Because you read to the end of Truman not to do this under a normal circumstance. Anyway, so our point there is that saying if I would be with a man tonight, like just as the next pasuk, there's no hope here. Even if I would give birth to a man tonight, I would conceive tonight. Would I even? I'm too old to give birth. And even if I did, are you going to wait and be an aguna? She uses the word aguna, right? Show them a zaleich no kizik hamini as leish kivan yeshli tikva gam ha'yisil alayla leish v'gam miladati banim alayin tisaber na hashem yigadlu. You're going to wait for that boy that I conceived tonight to be old enough to marry you? Like Shayla in the story of Yehuda and Tamar? You're going to wait for that? Please, I'm very bitter about this. I care very much for you. Go back and get married. What are you, and your whole point in life is to get married, maybe even have a child. Go back home. Alright? So that's called Shnei Achim. Shahayuba Olamo, they have to be in the world at the same time. That's why the story starts off. Two brothers are together. You do Yibam even if the brothers weren't living together, but they have to be alive together, right? So, you understand what I'm saying? Why this is not according to Halacha? Because if she would have a boy, this boy can't do Yibam. You got it? Do you agree with me on that? But there's a different implication, Hever. There's a much more powerful implication here. Come on, talk to me. What is the implication here? You okay, taping yours? What is the implication of what she's saying? I want you to live a life of some happiness and menucha with a husband. You're going to stay here and wait for a child of mine to be old enough to marry you? Go back home and find a man there. Come on, the obvious implication.
If that's what she's going to do for 20 years, she's not going to have anyone to support her or anything.
She's planning to remarry.
Yeah, a woman who's lost her husband without children wants to remarry and maybe have another child with another man, but what's the implication of why she's telling him, go back home so that you can have a little menucha with a husband there, because here your only chance is for me to have a child tonight that will marry you.
Oh, because she can't marry anybody else.
Right, no one here is going to want to marry you. Why come to a country where people hate you so much that they will not want to marry you? The only one who want to marry you is another child of mine, because I already let a child of mine marry you. Why does she have to say this? Right? Okay. You get it? Why does she have to say, why do you have to wait for me to have a child, wait 20 years to get married? Why? Why can't she just go and find a nice husband someplace? Because no one here wants to marry you. They know who your father was, or your great-grandfather was. They know you're from a nation that can't join the Kehila. Who's going to want to marry you? Right? Now, wait a second. Who's telling the truth here? Because when Boaz saw her in bed, and she professed the love for him, she says, cover your maidservant with your wing. It's clear she's saying, I want to marry you. And he says, this chesed is even better than your first chesed. Your first chesed, meaning you went with your mother-in-law, not your mother. This chesed, to go with me, this old geezer, rather than all those young men, rich or poor, who would flock to marry you. So he was telling you right. No question. Who's got it right here? Is Naomi right that is. You accept my implication here of what Naomi's saying here. No one would marry you except a child of mine. Right? And then Boaz praises her by saying, oh, it's so wonderful that you're willing to marry me and not all those young Bachurim, rich or poor, who would be lining up to marry.
It's a personal thing. I mean, like, to him, that's what he would say.
I mean, who's right? Can they both be right?
I mean, I guess they can't.
Are there men waiting to marry in Israel waiting to marry Ruth?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Wow. Ever since Matan Torah, there have been no shortage of Jewish men willing to marry women they shouldn't marry.
And Amway was exceptional in that he
didn't. Yeah, you didn't want to marry him for reasons of Moabitess. But the point is, she's making. Here we have Groucho Marx when he said, I would never be a member of a club that would have me as a member. You know that? Club, it's so schlubby to have me as a member, must not be a worthy kind of club. Now, I hear Chas v'Shalom, but I hear people saying, no, you know, if he's interested in me, he must not be in, you know, like she says, so low self-esteem, right? So low that like, she, if the guy's interested in me, I can't imagine why, you know, what he must be like, if he saw my profile, right? You know? You see, on the dating sites, the worst thing you could do is not put your picture on it. Because if your picture's not there, no one's, you're not going to get a hit. Not a hit. If someone takes you on a hit, maybe someone is blind. I remember, actually, I have a very dear friend who's blind. And I try to set him up. But what if I tell the girl afterwards he's blind? He goes, you think I'm so ugly that I can only date a blind guy? What else is she going to say? Anyway, point is that Naomi is correct, and Boaz is correct. The idea is that what Naomi's telling her is, you know, I could say what Boaz says also. There are plenty of guys willing to marry you in Israel. It's just that you shouldn't want to marry in. Got it? Okay. Okay. Okay, so right. Vatisena kolon vativkena od vatishak orpa bachamosa berustav kaba. They lifted their voices. Orpa kissed her and left, kissing goodbye. Berustav kaba. Rus clung to her, stuck around. I still remember, I mean, I was a little kid, the rabbi of my shul in the Bronx, the Bronx was already starting to, like, empty out. The shul, I remember where you could listen to the people just get up for Olein, it was like a big noise. And then within a few years, after the Bronx just exploded, the shul was not rather empty. Right? But there was still Jews in the surrounding areas who would come for Yizkor. Right? So Shavuos, the shul was full again. And right after Yizkor, they'd all pile right out. They wouldn't even wait to daven Musaf. It was a big exodus. And I remember the rabbi spoke before Yizkor that year. He says, you know, Orpa is kissing goodbye. Rus Dovkaba. Rus came and stuck around. So I'd ask you this. Stick around. The only time you ever come to shul is to cry. You only come for Yizkor. Come and see that there are some other things we sometimes do. So we compared it to Orpa, you know, disappeared. And Rus Dovkaba. And Rus clung to her. Already she's Eloheha, back to her gods. Go after her also. Okay. So this is where we'll have to stop today. But here's where the Chazal say that Ruth's official conversion is about to take place. Your gods, my God, your people, mine. And we learn a lot of Hilchos Geirus from this. Okay. There's quite a bit of Hilchos Geirus about what you're supposed to tell a prospective gear. But the implication of Chazal saying that the conversion takes place now is that until now
she
was not officially Jewish, right? It's obvious, right?
And then she married her children without converting.
And that's why. Well, I don't know what mechanism that could be submitted, but that's why she said to Orpah went back home to her gods. She wasn't Jewish yet. If she was Jewish, why would she send her home to her gods?
Then we also said that no one's going to want her. When she goes to a new land, people would want her if she was converted or anything else.
Not if you're from a nation that can't. Alright? But hold on a second. And it's not a question, by the way, of conversion. It's a question of who you can marry. Moabites are allowed to convert, join, and be a rabbi. You just can't marry a Jew. That's what the Lord called the Kala Shevet. The equivalence of a Mamzer, who was a perfectly good Jew. Mamzer come Chokhem, Kodim, Chokhem, Godolam, Oris. You can get Shlishi, and you can be Dorish, but you can't marry a Jew. Hold on. The problem is that in the fourth perek, Boaz is going to make us think that there is some kind of obligation on Ploni Amoni's part to marry Rus to perpetuate the name of Machlon. Right? I told you about that before. So here's where our big kasha. What kind of obligation? If Machlon died while married to a non-Jewish woman, the proof being that she's just converting here, that means that before here she's not Jewish. If a man dies married to a non-Jewish woman, what possible mitzvah can there be to perpetuate his name? Shem or Shem Yukov. There's no mitzvah to do yibum on a man who dies childless if his wife was not Jewish. You with me here, guys? It's a big kasha. Ben Ezra asks this kasha. When we get up to Perek Aleph, we'll visit it again. Okay,